go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this very interesting episode of Deep Space High, sci-fi TV review podcast, where we will break down the latest, and in this case, probably one of the greatest episodes from sci-fi TV. I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris. Yeah, I know, right? I mean, you hit the nail right on the head on that one. Oh my gosh, this was probably one of the greatest. I mean, fuck, I don't want to get too ahead, but season two of The Mandalorian is probably the greatest Star Wars to come out since the original movies. Like, goddamn. Mm-hmm. All right. So, what do we got?
Probably. In other news, just a quick update. Our poll is closed. The winner of our next show will be announced at the end of this episode. So, stay tuned for that.
Damn. I don't even know.
Chris doesn't know. No. Only I know right now.
Nope.
So, we will... I will let everyone know, including Chris, at the end of our episode. So let's go ahead and get into this episode. Spoiler warnings, if you have not seen it, please stop listening to the show and go watch it.
Like
if
you right have now.
Not seen this episode of Chapter 16, The Rescue. Go watch it right now and watch the credits and watch the end credit scene. Go watch it.
Ooh, I'm debating.
All of it.
You know what? I'm going to write that down because I got a question for the end of the episode when we get to the end credit scene that you just reminded me of. Yeah. So I'm going to write this down in the notes. So Steve, what's going on with you before we get into the episode?
Well, I was just going to hop right into it.
Oh,
I'm ready to talk.
You're ready to talk? All right, then screw it. Let's go.
You can do it. You can do it all night long.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
What do you got for it?
Ready to talk about it. No beating around the bush.
Nope.
So today's episode of Deep Space High, like I mentioned, we are covering the season 2 finale of The Mandalorian, chapter 16, entitled The Rescue. Yeah, what can I say? Like I mentioned in our intro, probably one of the greatest episodes of Star Wars and best Star Wars material, period, since Disney has taken over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I was watching, I watched it as it came out at midnight. And apparently, well, not apparently, this did happen. Their servers actually crashed. So many people were trying to watch it at midnight, like right when it released, that it actually crashed the servers. You might have saw it on you might have saw it on my Snapchat, Steve. I posted on my story that at midnight when the servers were crashed. And it wasn't just me, apparently.
Yeah, I did see something about that.
Apparently everybody did. I was watching a couple live reaction streams at the time, and even they were having troubles with it. So, I mean, this was...
Yeah, I went to bed super early last night, like 9 o'clock Central Standard Time early.
Damn.
So I was worn out. I was a little under the weather.
Oh, I was going to say, was it work?
But I was up at, no, I was just under the weather. Mm. So, but I woke up at 5:30, started watching it about 6 o'clock, and man, did it give me a jolt of energy about halfway through.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. It was so great. I mean,
let's talk about the first half because before we get into that, the good juicy stuff, the first half, I was a little underwhelmed. Especially with the opening scene, I mean, some of the dialogue and acting just seemed a little flat when they were, I don't want to say kidnapping Pershings, Dr. Pershings, but when they intercepted him on the shuttle and the pilot, one of the pilots was holding him hostage.
Really? I didn't
really care. I mean, it was a good scene, but it just, the acting and the dialogue just didn't feel there. It's almost like George Lucas wrote that dialogue. Which I know he didn't.
That's kind of funny, but I don't know. I actually
kind of funny. That's really funny.
I mean, I actually enjoyed the opening scene, and I thought it was pretty good because, you know, it's more of you can see the indifference between the even just the people inside of this. What do we call them? New Order, Remnants?
They're still Empire.
So just we'll stay. Okay, so we'll
Remnants stay. Of the Empire.
So we'll call them Empire Remnant or the Remnants. We'll just stick with that.
Yeah.
So
they're still imps.
Right. So there's still some division even between the imps. You got the psychopath pilot who's the dickhead, as you describe, who was on the Death Star when they blew up Alderaan, getting in the psychological makeup of oh my gosh, what's it? Cara Dunes?
Mm-hmm.
Less Angry Rosario Donald, as we go in the show. But you could see that she, you know, he's trying to get into her head. Before that, the other pilot's like, hey, I'm not with him. Like, I'm willing to talk a deal. Before he even gets a chance, dude kills him. So you could tell that, hey, maybe there's some divide between absolute loyalists like this guy. But you know that I think that it shows they're not all the same when it comes to these guys.
Oh, yeah, because the co-pilot who was shot was like, I want to live. I'll surrender.
Right, and the same
they
with
got the drop on us. We're just pilots. It's
kind of the same with the doctor, too, because the doctor, you know, they didn't really force information out of him. He pretty much cooperated fully and helped him out.
Well, yeah, he's one of those, like...
Because even Carr was like, I didn't even want to hear him out. But what's her name?
Yeah.
She was like, no, let's hear him
Bo-Katan.
Out.
Bo-Katan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the doctor, I imagine, is like a civilian doctor that is getting entangled into military activity.
Oh, yeah, I imagine. But another thing that I thought interesting with that opening scene was the teardrop. So Kara has a teardrop underneath her eye, which apparently in this universe symbolizes that she was she was from Alderaan and was a survivor. Air quote, survivor.
Oh, yeah.
Because he mentioned that oh, I see you have the teardrop. You must have been a survivor from Alderaan or some shit like that. And that's when she started.
Yeah, she has like a rebel emblem where their teardrop should be.
Mm-hmm. That was a great shot, though. And it's kind of like with the previous episode. Oh, God, I can't remember his name. Where he shot the Imperial supervisor that was a real dickhead. You know, got really emotional. It was kind of that same feel.
Mayfield.
So, I mean, that's why I like the opening scene. I thought it was better than you did. I was a little surprised you didn't like it.
I mean, I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just saying the acting didn't feel like it was there compared to the rest of the episode and some of the other guest stars and actors that we've had on the show.
Well, I mean, there wasn't a lot of opportunities to have, you know, real good acting. I mean, you just, one guy was dead before he had two lines. The other was being held hostage and you had the dickhead who just needed to be a dickhead, and I think he succeeded. So, you know, pretty good acting to me.
I guess.
But
I called it from last episode where Bo-Katan was the most likely to show up in the season finale, and she did.
Yeah, you did. I mean, it was. You kind of saw it coming, but what I was curious about was when they arrived on the planet to. Him and Boba, or Mando, I should say, and Boba, to get Bo-Katan, there was only the one sidekick. And when we saw him previously, didn't they have a guy with them? When they saw him last,
it was three of them? Alex or some wolf character guy. Yeah, there was a guy who was with him. It was a trio, and now it's just a duo. So I wonder what happened to the other guy.
Yeah, I mean,
probably just on some other mission or, you know.
Or could there be an actual, something. Like, you know, hideout or camp that they have set up to where they meet regularly and they could just be on this planet for whatever reason. You know, maybe they have like a home base or something.
Yeah, maybe her and Bo-Katan and I think it's Reeves or something are just working on a mission and they're just having a drink or getting lunch.
Yeah, but I mean, that was a pretty great scene too, because then you see a little back and forth between Boba and Katan and her sidekick. You know, because Boba...
Reeves. So it's like something Reeves.
Is it Reeves, the third chick?
Yeah, it's something Reeves. I can't...
Okay.
Don't know it off the top of my head, but...
Then we'll go with Reeves. But, I mean, I thought it was interesting that because Mando... Or not Mando. Boba is a genetic copy of Jango, who was unaltered. So mm-hmm. he was an exact clone of Django, who grew up in real time.
Mm-hmm.
But yet when Django seems so much older than Bo-Katan, even though Bo-Katan was alive during the war, she fought in these, you know, it kind of created a bit more confusion of this timeline, you know, that I've had previously throughout our discussions.
Well, here's the thing. So I'll clear it up, kind of. Django was about 40 in Attack of the Clones.
Mm-hmm.
Bulba was about 10.
Right.
Attack of the Clones, we're probably talking 30 years later. Mm-hmm. 30 to 35 years later. So Bulba's in his mid-50s or mid-40s. Now, the X factor that you're leaving out is the damage the Sarlacc pit did on him, because the actor in real life is Tamara Morrison is 60 years old or something like that.
Right.
But you can get away with it with all his scars that you could see around his face and on top of his head from the Sarlacc pit. So that's kind of why he looks older than he really is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a major thing. So it's still, you know, he's still mid 40s technically.
But I mean, he just seems so much older than Bo. I mean, Bo doesn't look like old enough to where she fought in the Clone Wars, or was even alive during the Clone Wars, let alone fought in the Clone Wars. Both, neither of the two Mandalorians did.
Well, I think you gotta think about it two ways. One, Bo is being played by a younger actress than her character's age.
Mm-hmm.
And Tamora Morrison is playing Boba Fett, the actor is playing someone who's actually younger than his actual age. And then, you know, to kind of round it all out, Tatooine with the two sons, in my opinion, I don't think it's ever been confirmed, takes a brutal effect on a human body. That way they age quicker. That's why Obi-Wan looks so old between 3 and 4.
I mean, that would make sense.
And that could be why Boba looks a little older, because being on Tatooine can really, you know, could really do some damage.
Oh yeah. Oh, I imagine.
And really ages up a person, and I think that's kind of why.
That's not a bad explanation.
You know, Obi-Wan's gonna look older, and then Bulba's gonna look older.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. But I mean, that confrontation was still pretty great. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that, or if there's gonna be a further Boba and Bo-Katan kind of confrontation. And we'll kind of get...
Yeah, we'll see, because, you know, two episodes ago, they explained it where Django was a Mandalorian because he was a foundling, and then, hence...
Yeah, but Bo...
Bo was a Mandalorian.
But Bo considers Boba to be a clone, not the son.
And not technically a Mandalorian, and I think that's where we're seeing a lot of...
Right, plus you got the animosity of the clones betraying them and betraying... You know, the Jedi, there's probably still some animosity there. So.
Yeah, probably so.
I'm curious if Boba had that
probably
same.
So that's...
That same. I don't know if it was Gene, but was aware of Order 66. You know, if they had that same programming.
No, because I think he was unaltered. He didn't have. I guess you haven't gotten there, or maybe you have with Clone Wars, but I don't think he was implanted with that chip for Order 66.
No, the furthest I've gotten on Clone Wars is season 4. And then I'm restarting it because I haven't, it's been a while since I've watched and I forgot everything, so I'm just going to rewatch it again. Especially now that I got some more free time.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of those, it's covered, I think it's in 5 or 6 of chapter 5, or not chapter, season 5 or 6 of Clone 4. Clone Wars, there's an arc that explains why the clones turned on the Jedi.
Well, I'm looking forward to watching it.
So, I mean, if y'all haven't watched that, I highly recommend watching Clone Wars. There's some duds of episodes in there, but overall the series and seasons are pretty good. And there's a lot of good Star Wars stories in them.
Yeah, there is. And apparently there was, especially since that appears the direction that Mandalorian and Star Wars is actually taking. They're just kind of continuing off of Clone Wars and Rebels, essentially.
Yeah, it seems like they're going to explore at least live action shows, they're going to hit the post-Jedi, post-Return of the Jedi, pre-Force Awakens era pretty hard.
Yeah.
Which I don't blame them. There's a lot that fans want to see in there.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's something we should talk about before we end the show. You know, what do we see as the future of Star Wars going forward? Because, I mean, there's so much that they're doing. They're riding high on this momentum, and they're going to be doing a lot. So I think that'd be something great we could talk about before the show ends.
Yeah, I think we talked about it briefly last episode, but we could touch on it again a little bit here, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot more information now. We didn't know what we know now because we didn't have the finale. So, I mean, it's a lot to look forward to. But I say let's move on.
Let's talk about their, essentially assault on the light cruiser it's Gideon's light cruiser. And it was a pretty dope plan.
Did you notice that it was pretty much an all-female team that took the cruiser?
Yeah, it was one of those.
Do you think that's why they didn't have the one guy there, that they wanted to do that all-female team-up kind of thing?
Most likely.
I mean, it was pretty badass. I mean, I'll give them that.
I mean, I applaud it because, you know, there's this scene in Avengers Endgame towards in the final battle where they do an all-female team-up that felt a little forced. Here, it didn't feel forced at all.
No, it really didn't.
And organic and natural, and, you know, they did it, but they didn't emphasize it. You knew, hey, you know, there's five people leading this charge. Four of them are females. But you know they're all capable fighters. They're all badasses. They're all...
Oh, yeah. And that's...
You know, you didn't look at it and be like, oh, it's four females fighters attacking the ship. You're like, no, this is four gunslinging badass motherfuckers helping Mando capture the ship and get Grogu.
Right, right. Yeah, it's not... You know, that's one of the...
And that's the kind of shit I want to see. I want it not to feel forced.
Oh, yeah. I think that's what everybody wants to see. I think that's the major criticism with, I guess the kind of social justice movements, especially in Hollywood, is that, you know, they're just forcing it so much onto people. It's not organic, and it's pretty obvious that it's forced, that it just draws a lot of people away from it. But I think this was actually awesome.
And here they built it. They laid the stones in episode 3 or 4 when, you know, we saw Bo-Katan and her team for the first time.
Well, you saw them lay the stones for all of them.
You know, they built it.
Right. Oh, you know that all four of these chicks were badasses from watching the season to see them all together. I mean, it's almost, they should almost make a comic book series out of that. Because I know that...
They could, or...
I know they're making I don't know if they're making a show about her. The chick that plays May from... Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, Fennec Shan.
That's her name in the show, Fennec Shan. I know she's going to be in an animated series because she, the actress who played her, is going to be voicing the role. So, I mean, that'd be...
Yeah, she's going to be in... Her character will make an appearance in Bad Batch, and then, you know, she'll likely make an appearance in another live-action show we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I mean...
More about this light cruiser. I liked the plan of... You know, I guess this cruiser has a specific, it's not a car, hangar for TIE fighters launching. And it kind of, the way it's designed, how it's like a fork and there's a split in the middle of the ship. And it's to give, obviously, TIE fighters protection so they can launch and get up to speed and jump into a battle. And I was like,
yeah,
that's a dope design. And then it's a smart plan to crash the ship into that area so they can't launch TIE fighters at Boba Fett. So it's pretty intelligent.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it'd be more intelligent if they had one in the front and one in the back rather than just the one with the...
Well, they got the engines in the back. They have multiple hangars, but, you know, this is specifically for a launching pad for TIE fighters. That'd mean they don't have TIE fighters elsewhere.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, and I don't know. I think that Moff Gideon knew right away as soon as this happened that they were about to be invaded. Because as soon as, I don't know if he knew that was Boba Fett chasing him, but it was pretty obvious that he wasn't trying to hit him, given after the fact that it landed, and they did get two or three TIE fighters, and how easily he was able to just take him out, you know, like that. Because that was the moment when he sent the Dark Troopers on him, and I think he kind of suspected it from the beginning that this was Mando's plot, but... Gotta give Moff Gideon credit. Dude's even in his own words, he just said, assume I know everything. So,
yeah. Well, it's one of those, you send a message at the end of episode 7 saying, we're coming, motherfucker. Paraphrasing, of course. And
of course.
So he's going to be on high alert, and he's seeing something suspicious, you know, a ship breaking protocol and kind of clogging up the TIE fighter launch tube. And then he hears the, you know, guns or, you know, shots are being fired in the hangar. He's like, okay, yep. Send them. Something's wrong. Activate the dark troopers.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think about the dark troopers?
I thought it was weird how when they started powering up, you kind of hear dubstep a little bit.
Deadpool would be glad. Hear dubstep.
Yeah.
He'd be happy.
But it was weird to hear that when they started up. Luckily, it was really brief. But I think, you know, they're pretty cool. It was weird how Dr. Pershing was saying, hey, or he was saying, these are third generation dark troopers. They're no longer like an exoskeleton, kind of like an Iron Man. They're fully robotic and droid like.
Yeah.
Like Iron Legion.
That they're perfect, and to do so was to eliminate the flaw of the human component of it or something like that. That's what he said.
Yeah. And we saw when Mandalorian, or when, yeah, Din Djarin's Mandalorian had to fight one of them, he really struggled because their armor is actually deflecting some of the bolts. I know that was a big pet peeve of yours last episode. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I know, the damn armor. Well, I mean, at least it did its job.
Why can't that be standard issue?
Yeah, I know, right? But, I mean, you also saw how tough fucking Baskar is, because he punching the shit out of Mando's face, and it was the wall behind him that was breaking and damaging him. Not Mando's armor. So, I mean, that just goes to show you how tough Baskar is, again.
Mm-hmm.
But did you notice that, I don't know, maybe it was just me, but the Dark Troopers looked like little Zeuses from Real Steel?
I don't recall seeing Real Steel, so I can't comment on that.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, it's on Netflix. If you get the chance, go look. But they look almost exactly like Zeus, just a slightly smaller version of him. It was remarkable how even with the punch, the way that it punched, it looked similar to the way that Zeus punched in Real Steel. So I don't know, maybe that's just me, but something that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it felt, the Dark Troopers felt more like a robotic Iron Man, you know, less organic moving, you know, they were obviously moving like droids, mm-hmm. but that's what I felt like. And they kind of look like, I'm sure, you know, in the MCU, Iron Man has 47 different marks
at one point.
And I'm sure in the comics he has hundreds of different versions of his Iron Man armor. And I'm sure one of them looks similar to what we saw with the Dark Troopers.
Yeah, the Hulkbuster.
Wouldn't be surprising.
But.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I don't know. Did the Dark Troopers kind of succeed? Or it was clear that they were trying to get like a huge suspense with the Dark Troopers for the show. Do you think they kind of succeeded mm-hmm. in doing that and building up the suspense and the action? And because I mean, they
well,
say
the action was good. I mean, I don't know why it took the Dark Troopers so long to regroup and re-infiltrate the ship. You know, I felt like they could have
probably because it took them. It probably just took them that long to fly to a hangar. Because they had to fly to an open hangar and get in, because they didn't come in the same way that they were blown out.
Well, no, they kind of just flown through. Because what happens is, you know, the hangars are kind of like ray shielded, so there's several spots on the ship, like that launch area for the TIE fighters in the front that we were mentioning, mm-hmm. that has a ray shield. So they were penetrating all the different ray shields, and it looked like the platoon split into four different groups, and kind of entered in each one and patrolled the whole ship, with the main group going to attack the bridge once everyone was on the bridge.
Right. Oh, and then,
Oh, but we gotta go
to the Moff Gideon scene first.
Well, I was gonna say, Moff Gideon, Giancarlo Esposito is just like the perfect bad guy in this. He is just, oh, I'm so glad he didn't shoot himself like he tried to at the end of the episode, because he is just a phenomenal actor, and I am loving I'm loving him being the antagonist. He's I liked him at the start, and now he's just growing and growing. He's intelligent. He's just, you know, he's like very deceptive.
Almost very Thrawn-like in his level of intelligence and just understanding what's going on. Kind of almost what's going on, because he manipulated Mando. Well,
yeah, and he's very knowledgeable, and you could see him manipulating Bo-Katan once Mando captures him after their fight, and is very knowledgeable on the backstory of the Darksaber and the Mandalorian people. And
well,
it kind of made me think.
He should, because he defeated Bo-Katan, or he had to defeat Bo-Katan to get the Darksaber. So he had to know the tradition.
But he had to know that.
Yeah.
So, like, so that leads to, you know, that leads me to think, okay, is he Mandalorian? When the Siege of Mandalore happened, was he designated Moff of Mandalore and came very familiar with their culture and learned about the Darksaber? There's so much more I want to learn.
Oh, I mean,
I want to find out about Gideon.
I don't know if that's how he did it. He might have just worked with somebody in, like, cooperated with somebody in, like, Death Watch, or somebody who's fought with somebody who had it and learned the story, and you know, when fighting the Mandalorians, probably defeated one of them and took it from them, and that's why Bo-Katan's trying to get it back. But I you know, when Mando walked in on Baby Yoda, and, you know, Moff was holding the Darksaber up to Baby Yoda, I don't think he knew how much Mando knew about this own story. And that was the moment that he decided, okay, I'm going to use this to manipulate it to create the problem going forward. Because as soon as he turned his back, that's when he went after Mando. Or when Mando turned his back.
Well, yeah, because he knew, me leading to believe that, you know, in a straight up fair fight, Gideon can't take on Mando. Not with all that Baskar. There's no way. So he tried to get him in a sneak attack.
Well, then how?
That's what I.
Because Bo-Katan.
Empire had it don't fight fair.
Well, the Bo-Katan had it at first. Well, yeah, we know that for sure. But if Bo-Katan had it and he took it from Bo-Katan, then, you know, he would think.
He had to defeat Bo-Katan in battle.
Right. And I think. And Bo-Katan's no. Slouch.
She's no slouch when it comes to fighting.
Yeah, thank you. She's no slouch when it comes to fighting. So I don't know if he knew that he would be able to defeat Mando or not, or maybe he was a little bit, I don't know. I mean, what would change between Mando and Bo-Katan to where his confidence would fade that he wouldn't be able to defeat him? Because they both got
maybe his age. Who knows how long he's had the Darksaber?
That's true.
Maybe he's not as young as he used to be.
Maybe not. Or maybe he was just
had help.
Maybe. I hope they go continue into this backstory.
That's what I was saying. I hope so, too, and kind of figure out. Because I think, like I said, we know from season one he was involved of the Siege of Mandalore. Now, what happened after the Siege of Mandalore? I'm thinking because Moff is like a governorship title, he was pretty much named Moff of Mandalore in my professional, semi-professional theory. Mm-hmm. So I would like to know more. Maybe see how he came into possession, the fight that led to Bo-Katan losing the Darksaber.
Oh, yeah. And then, I mean, fuck. The look on... I can't remember what the actress's name is, but the look on Bo-Katan's face...
Oh, Katie Sackhoff looked...
Oh, yeah, like, when Mando walked in...
She was like, are you fucking serious? What happened? How... And it felt like he was taunting a little with, you know, Mando having it activated while walking onto the bridge. It felt like the writers wanted him to unintentionally toy with her, which made it, so much more precious when the look on her face.
Oh, I know, and she did a phenomenal job with that. I mean, fuck, and she knows.
She's like, this motherfucker right here got my saber. Mm-hmm. I said he was mine, and he carrying my saber.
See,
this motherfucker right here about to lay a bitch out.
Okay, now here's my theory that I got. Now, is this what they've been planning on doing the entire time, was trying to make Mando the new leader of the Mandalorians to bridge the gap between former Death Watch and Bo-Katan, former enemies, have the philosophy of the old traditionalist Mandalorians and the new ones and bring it together as a new leader? Like, that would be,
I don't know.
That'd be a great way to approach the
show.
Here's
what I think.
And to split it off.
It would be. But just knowing the character over the last 16 episodes and two seasons, I don't think. And it, I mean, we even saw it here. Mando doesn't give two shits about the power that comes along with the Darksaber. He doesn't give.
But that would make him the best leader, though. He doesn't want the power. And he is. I mean, you could see the level of growth that he does because he won. So he is the leader of Mandalore, whether he likes it or not. I know. But you've seen so much growth with Mandalorian over the past 2 years. And then with him. A little bit of spoiler, we're getting ahead, having to give up baby Yoda or Grogu and let him go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this could be the path that they take going forward, especially with that end credit scene, to where you can start to see maybe a little, not a resistance movement, but maybe a new growth of power with Mandalorians, and then, you know, with Boba taking power, when we'll get to that in a minute. In a different sector, maybe they could form a form of alliance, and you could see the confrontation approaching with Thrawn, and you could see the direction that they're trying to go with this new Star Wars universe. It's very exciting.
Well, yeah. I mean, you confused me a little bit because...
I'm trying to leave out some details because we're getting ahead. There's more to it because we haven't just talked about it yet with the best part of this entire episode we haven't even talked about yet.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, one more thing I want to bring up before we move on to that best part, or since we're almost there, is the Darksaber was gifted to Bo-Katan in the first place.
Who gifted it?
By Sabine Wren in Rebels. Without a trial by combat, without her defeating Sabine Wren. So, maybe the circumstances are different because she actually did lose it in a battle to Moff Gideon, so she has to technically win it back.
Right.
But, yeah, it's been gifted to her once and she was willing to take it, but now that it's being, you know, gifted here, she's not willing to take it. So I'm kind of curious to see and how they explore her ideology and her reasoning behind not accepting the gift. And now Din Djarin's Mandalorian is the rightful ruler of Mandalore and the Mandalorian people.
Yeah, and he's pretty clear and obvious. He doesn't want it. I mean, he even joked, like, I yield. Here, take it.
You beat me in a fight, I yield.
Yeah, but Bo knows that she's going to have to actually fight Mando, and she really didn't want to because I don't think she thinks she can beat him. I mean, if
probably not.
Because Mando took Gideon down pretty easily, and if Gideon was able,
I wouldn't say pretty.
I mean, he's had more difficult fights.
Well, yeah. I mean, when he was caught off guard, and then once he was able to
get the spear,
once the fight moved into the hallway,
yeah,
and he was able to get the spear and get his footing, yeah, it was
pretty much done.
You know, I won't say Mando was toying with him, but he made the fight look easier than it needed to be. So, but I liked how Gideon was, he was playing like devil's advocate, not really devil's advocate. What's the word I'm looking for? It's instigator with no, you can't do that. You can't gift it to her. She has to beat you because the story behind the Darksaber is so powerful that, you know, if they find out she didn't beat you, all hell will break loose. And it's like, oh my God, just more of a reason to love him as an antagonist.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It was great.
And it's one of the reasons why I'm kind of excited about the High Republic. And it's also another reason why I think that Star Wars needs to bring back Knights of the Old Republic as canon and just remaster the game. Because here's another, I'm going to go a little bit of tangent, but not, it's still on the same topic. Yep,
typical Chris.
Okay, it's still on the same relative
topic.
Chris
Tangent. Chris Tangent Hour. I'm going to have to make a soundbite and everything. Okay. So stick it in and be like,
yeah,
Chris,
I know.
Tangent Hour.
You should just make it an actual segment. Give me my own 5-10 minutes of the segment of the show to go on a tangent and save it for the, that way we don't have to do it for the rest of it. But okay.
That's 20% of the show.
But okay, so the Knights of the reason why I think they should is because it goes so much into the history and the story of the Mandalorians, the rise of the Mandalorians, the fall of the Mandalorians, and they could use that, an already established arc, reestablish it into the universe and continue off of it The second game is not owned by BioWare. It's owned by a different company, which is not BioWare's parent company is EA, which is owned by Disney. So they could do it. And then they could move the storyline in whatever direction that they want to go to add, add in more explanation into the Darksaber. You can get more into the prequels, you can get more story and background of the origins of the Darksaber, more origins around the Mandalorian without having to create a whole new storyline to go off of.
Well, they can get into that in the Mandalorian show, and they have a little bit, and that's what Moff Gideon was saying. He did a really good job of explaining the Darksaber for those fans who haven't watched Clone Wars or don't recall Clone Wars as well as some other fans.
Oh yeah, but I mean, like, so, they could kind of explain
why it's so important.
Oh, I mean, I get it, but I mean, like, they could actually make content, movies, books, shows about how the Darksaber came to be, go over the Jedi who first created the Darksaber, who was a Mandalorian, and go, create their own shows. And
all in Clone Wars. Yes, they could
do it just solely based off of that, like its own origin. I mean, why not? They got the momentum. Everybody would love to see it because it's just, more explanation of what's going on, and it's their way of making money. So, it's a plausible way of doing it to make a lot of money that would satisfy a lot of fans, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fans have been calling for an Old Republic, hundreds or thousands of years prior to the movies. And I think eventually Disney will cave and get there. We're just not there yet.
They're getting there. I mean, they're doing it with the High Republic. That's a start, but
yeah,
we'll get there.
We'll see.
All right.
We'll see. Let's get to the meat of this episode. The caviar, so to speak, the icing on the cake, the sprinkles on the ice cream,
the cherry on top,
the cherry on top, the Luke Skywalker of Star Wars.
Spoilers.
I already gave the spoiler warning at the start, so
that's true. But yeah, so I mean, they're on the bridge, they're dealing with this confrontation, and the Dark Troopers. They got a squad outside of the door. They have the blast doors sealed, and the Dark Troopers are banging their way trying to get in. And then all of a sudden, a single X-Wing just so happens to land on board the ship, and then the banging stops. And the Dark Troopers go in turn for a new threat, and it was probably one of the most awesome scenes, because, I mean, it was so almost Vader-esque,
it felt like 5 minutes of just, I mean, you don't see it's Luke, and you don't really know it's Luke for sure. I mean, the X-Wing
is a good hint,
is a very good hint, so you're like,
you're strongly 99%
sure that it's Luke.
Mm-hmm. And then the green lightsaber.
I mean, there was one point well, I saw the green lightsaber and I was like, ooh, could this be Ezra Bridger, because he had a green lightsaber. And the way he was holding it kind of covered up at the top half. It covered up the distinctive properties of Luke's lightsaber. So you're like, oh, I'm not 100% sure this is Luke. It could be Ezra, but it's like he's in a dark robe.
And then once you saw him start fighting, you were like, oh my god, this is Luke. I mean, he's just cutting through these Dark Troopers like they were nothing. I mean, even Mando struggled with just one, with the pure Beskar, spear.
Yeah, Luke at this time, he's a very well-established Jedi Knight, if not
a master
of his abilities.
I think he's a master.
I mean,
I think that's, like, we're at the point where he's rebuilding.
He's been training for like 10 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's...
And 5 years after the Return of the Jedi, so, or six, depending on how much time passed between season one and two, but...
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he looked flawless. Troopers. This was nothing.
And then he did you notice that he did a force crush on that one trooper?
Oh yeah, the last one.
Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. And apparently that...
I was hoping...
Apparently that's supposed to be like a big no-no with the old, or with the oh, yeah, that New is Republic a big no-no. Jedi, but
well,
he can do whatever the fuck he wants now, but... I mean, because, it's his own Jedi Order. He can do with whatever the hell he wants, but...
It's a droid. If it was a stormtrooper, would he crush? Probably not.
Right.
But I was hoping to see him. There was one part where he threw cargo trapping one of the...
Oh, yeah, he pinned one of
Dark Troopers. Yeah, he pinned one of them, and I was hoping he was just going to throw his lightsaber and and then call it back with the Force. And I was like, oh, we didn't get that. That would have been cool.
That would have been.
Like Yoda in Revenge of the Sith when he throws his lightsaber into one of the clones.
Oh, my God.
I was like, oh, that would have been cool. But I was like,
I didn't think about that. That would have been awesome.
I was like, throw the lightsaber. Throw it. But no, we didn't. That would have been cool.
Mm-hmm. Which also kind of brought up, you know, a second question. I mean, I kind of know the answer to it, but it's almost like, why didn't Din Djarin Mando use the Darksaber when he found out that the lightsaber could cut through it like it was nothing? Or these guys, like it was nothing.
Probably because he's a good shot, not really a swordsman.
I mean, that's true, but I mean, again, they're still cutting through it like nothing. You just got to... cut it.
Yeah,
aim for the head, and it seems to be working.
We're talking about, you know, it was like, what, 10-on-1, 10-on-4 with some of the blasters or something, but that wouldn't have gone very well.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's...
But then again, he does have Baskar. He can take the blaster hits. We already saw that.
True. I don't know. He could have, and I thought about that, but...
I mean, you get why not, like the way, but... I mean, it's just still a question.
I like the way
ask.
Cards folded anyways, cards fell anyways.
Oh, yeah.
And it was great. And it was one of those... I was surprised because I didn't think Disney would have the huevos to do it.
I know!
And they did. And they had the huevos. And I was like, no, I thought they were going to bring in another Jedi that might have been established in the games, comics, or other TV shows. But no, they brought the Jedi of all Jedis in this era. The myth. The legend, the Luke Skywalker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, this also brings great. On another theory that I got, but we'll get into it later because I want to keep talking about this. But yeah.
I mean, I saw some reactions where people were watching it and cried and bawled. And I was I didn't get there. They were so happy they cried, but I was like so happy where I was like,
oh my gosh, it was awesome.
Jumping up and down on the couch, not like with my feet, but I was sitting on the couch, but like jumping myself up and down.
Oh yeah!
Like, oh my god! Oh my, yes.
You felt like a little kid again.
It was great.
I mean, you really do.
Yes.
Because I mean, I'm sure the grown ass men who were bawling out, they were the little kids when this came out the first time, and to see, and you know, when Luke took off his hood and you saw it was Luke, it was. I really thought it was Luke. I mean, it was not like the CGI from Leia from Rogue One. This was
it looked
far
better
superior.
Than the
Oh my gosh, it was.
Yeah, it looked a lot better, but it still felt like, a really good video game. Like you could tell it was CGI, but it was so much better than the Rogue One.
What I noticed
Tarkin and Leia
is the first half,
and even the
of when they were talking, it looked exactly like him. But in the second half of the conversation. After he was like, no, he's waiting for your approval to go. That's when the CGI looked like it started to crap out a little bit. They're not as good. But that first part.
Yeah, and I was trying to. It sounded like they just automate, you know, like it was a robot Luke voice. Or they went back to the original trilogy and just pulled lines that he had spoken and kind of just used that as the dialogue.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me. Because Mark Hamill's voice is so
it can't be perfect.
Matured. It's so much more matured now than it was, you know, when he was young. So, I mean, but that was another thing. He looked, they almost made him look a little bit too young. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you noticed.
He would have been.
Because I just rewatched.
He was 19 and.
Well, I bring it up because I rewatched Return of the Jedi. Like Thursday night before I watched this, so I saw him in 6, and saw Mando when it came out, and he looked younger, didn't look as aged. He looked more like a New Hope Luke, not Return of the Jedi.
It's just
so I mean maybe
it's
nitpicking,
not perfect,
but, you know,
CGI or deep fakes. It's not perfect, but I mean I was like, yeah, that looks like. Looks like a really good video game version of Luke, and for me, it I was so giddy and happy that I didn't even care.
Oh, I thought, I mean, I thought I was above, like, above video game version for Luna. I thought it was, I well, really yeah, did they, thought it was for a second. Like when they first took
it
out
didn't
that
look hood. Like live action, but it was like, damn.
Oh yeah. And then you, when you get to see R2 as well. Oh, that was great. Seeing R2.
Oh yeah.
That was just bonus on top of it.
Yeah, and then Grogu, you know, goes with Luke.
Oh my gosh! See, now the scene that I was hoping for was Grogu doing the magic wave hand at the end, waving goodbye before the doors closed. Mm-hmm. That was the scene I was hoping for. That would have been funny. That would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been good. It was very emotional because Din takes off his helmet. You can see Pedro Pascal is all teary eyed, and I was like, "That's
oh yeah." I mean, this is touching. The guy who's
it's lovely.
I mean, his
Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni did a good job.
Oh my gosh, they did a phenomenal job. I mean, and then the character arc for just this guy. He lost his parents to droids when he was kids. He didn't raised by an adopted family, lived in an alien philosophy. He loves it, but he never really had kids on his own. He had no real understanding of what it was to have a father, and then, you know, he kind of had this kid forced upon him. This is the closest thing that he's ever had to a son, and I'm sure it was incredibly painful to let him go. Yeah. I mean, he took off his mask in front of everybody. I mean, you knew that. I mean, he gave up the Mandalorian Creed for that, just to be able to do that. I know he did it previous episode, but the guy was cool enough, like, hey, I saw nothing. You know, you're good. But
yeah, it was.
It was a big moment for him.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah, it was.
It was great. Great episode of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Great episode of TV.
Oh my gosh, yes. And then let's not forget the end credit scene, though.
Yes. Bubba doing what Bubba does, and he kills the Twi'lek, who was
it was Jabba's right-hand
damn,
man.
Jabba's right-hand man. His he kills him on Jabba's throne, and Bubba is going to take the throne, and we are getting either a spin-off series or he is getting his own arc in Mandalorian season 3.
I think he's getting his own series.
That they are dubbing the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, that's one of the questions that I had earlier that I said I wanted to bring up. Are they doing this in these books and chapter styles? Because you notice that each episode's called chapters. Are they doing it because they intend to release like actual book versions of these shows like they do for the movies? So you, and comic book?
That I don't think so. I think what happened is Filoni pulled from his Last Airbender days where, you know, each season of Avatar was in books, but instead of books, it's now chapters. But I think, you know, one of the big things is they announced Mandalorian season 3 would come out Christmas of 2021. And this episode in the end credit scene, Book of Boba Fett, was coming out December of 2021. So that's what's drawing a lot of questions is this going to be Mandalorian season 3? Is this Boba Fett kind of story arc? And the whatever happening with Bo-Katan and Din Djarin and Mandalore, is that going to be pushed to season 4?
See, okay, and I'm...
Or is it its own spinoff series and then...
Okay.
And they're going to air two shows around the same time.
Here's where I'm really glad you asked this question, because it fits in perfectly to my tangent from earlier where I said we didn't have all the pieces, because now we have all the pieces. So with Luke taking Grogu, and I'm assuming they're going to be starting their own Jedi Academy, and then Boba taking over the Hutt's territory and controlling the underground, if you have Mando, who is the now leader of the Mandalorians, and he manages to unite the factions and restore, you know, power to Mandalore, and then you got Boba running the underworld, you got Luke starting his own Jedi Academy, and you got the New Republic with Cara Dune, they're all buddy buddies now, or there's connections there, and you got the rise of the remnants of the Empire. And you know that they're bringing in Thrawn. Are they doing what Lucasfilm was originally going to have as their sequel movies with, you know, Thrawn in the books through these TV shows? And that's what they're setting up through all these story arcs and all these storylines to set up, you know, all these post, you know, the post-Star Wars or the post-original trilogy shows or movies or storylines that we should have gotten but we never did get, and try to create that connection between the end of the Fall of the Empire and the rise of the First Order is through that.
Well,
I know it's kind of complicated, but
you lost me. You lost me in trying to explain it, but here's how I'll answer. Yes. The majority of the shows that Star Wars announced that we covered, that we talked about a little bit last episode. So like the Ahsoka show, the Rangers of the New Republic, mm-hmm. Mandalorian season two, obviously this, or three, this Boba Fett show, and or season three of Mandalorian, depending on how it goes. A lot of these shows are taking place post Return of the Jedi, really early post Return of the Jedi, to, so they're going to explore those 30 years in between original trilogy and sequel trilogy, and will probably set up the First Order. You know, they have shows covering other areas, but I think that that seems like the main focus with some of these TV shows for now. And who knows where the movies will go.
Well, I like the direction that that would be if they were to go that way for the TV shows.
I mean, they are. I mean, Ahsoka, I mean, Thrawn's going to be probably the main villain for Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. That's taking place at the same time Mandalorian is. And like I said, Rangers of the New Republic, we don't know a lot about it, but we know it's taking place at the same time Mandalorian is.
Right.
And I'm sure all these antagonists will be.
So could it be like a DC universe kind of thing where all the, or I guess, yeah, DC would be the best, where all these shows are part of the same universe, come together and eventually have one show storyline to kind of conclude the series with Thrawn, almost like a Defenders kind of.
No, I mean, they're just
bring all the,
it'll be more like an MCU. They're MCUing the Star Wars universe. All these continuous storylines, and then, yeah, maybe they'll have a show or a movie at the end of it that just wraps it all up.
Could be. But I'm excited, and I hope they put John Favreau. I want John Favreau.
Either one of them. Well, both of them.
Well, Dave,
make them co-heads of Lucasfilm.
Oh, I mean, Dave's great, but I think, you know, listening to John Favreau talk, and have you watched Galleries? Like, I'm curious at all?
Yes, I have seen some of them, but Dave Filoni was George Lucas's like protege, his apprentice. Yes.
You're right. I keep getting them two mixed up. Filoni's the protege. So, dude, he's fucking genius, so, man. When you, I listen to
them. They're both really big Star Wars nerds.
Oh, they are. And then when I listen to them, you know, kind of explain, especially the prequels. And I went back and rewatched it. I mean, it's, you just see it in a whole different way, and it's truly remarkable. Yes. And I think he needs to be in charge of Star Wars, period, going forward. I mean,
I agree, and there are millions of fans out there with you who agree. So
yeah, well, get to work. If we can, pressure it. If we all unite together, we can pressure Disney to make him the head, or at least create a control.
Well, he's got to want it too. I don't know how much he wants it.
Oh my gosh! Why wouldn't he want it?
And then they have like, then Kathleen. True, but then Kathleen Kennedy is still in that role for right now. So
just give her.
They're stuck with her.
Let her be the figurehead, puppet head. You know, if Disney was smart, you would go with the best person for the job that's going to make you the most money and satisfy everyone. Which right now I think is Dave Filoni, not what's her name.
I don't disagree.
So,
all right. Is there anything else we wanted to bring up on this?
We kind of went over what to look forward to with the Star Wars universe going forward. That's kind of what that end part was. I don't know. I mean, what are you looking forward to seeing for season three? What should we expect for season three?
Either way, there's the obvious way they've set it up is tension between Bo-Katan and Din Djarin. And, you know, I would like to see the Mandalorian season three follow both of those characters as they try to retake Mandalore. I mean, his quest is over. He was successful in delivering Grogu to a Jedi, and now he can devote some time, like he promised to consider at the start of this episode, to reclaim Mandalore. So that's where I'd like to go with season three. And then, you know, Boba Fett, we're obviously going to see some sort of underground, dark, maybe, you know, syndicate type stuff with his show. How many seasons it'll run, I don't know, but that's where we're going from, just based off the last 10 minutes of this show.
Here's a bit of, I guess, unorthodox thinking about how next season could be, but it's interesting and plausible.
Let's hear how wrong you're going to be.
It won't be too long. What if...
I said wrong. How wrong you're going to be.
Oh, wrong. I thought you said how long. I'm like, I'm not going to tangent that long. I don't know. What if instead of Mando and Bo-Katan fighting for the Mandalorian throne, they get married and share the throne and retake the throne together, or retake Mandalorian together? So that way it's a loophole to where they're both the leaders. Mando can be the figurehead because, you know, he won, he's got it. And then Bo be the real one. It's not impossible. Like, it's an interesting, like I said, it's outside the box. The Mandalorian, and it's plausible here, you know.
Here's how I will disprove that. Mandalorian monarchy, as I'm throwing up in air quotes, is like the monarchy of England. And I'm not talking about nowadays where, you know, what's her face, the current queen, is a figurehead while the government's actually ran by a prime minister. It's the queen is the queen. Now there's a king. Whoever Queen Elizabeth's husband is technically a king.
Oh, he's dead.
There's no king. No one really cares. Huh?
He's dead. There's no king. Queen Elizabeth's very old. She's like 98.
No, her husband's still alive.
Is he? I thought she was dead.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. If he is, if he is alive, you know, he's not really, he doesn't have the power and the draw that the queen has.
Well, I mean...
And the thing is, whoever possesses the Darksaber is the ruler. He would just, you know, Bo-Katan would just be the first lady.
Well, that's why I'm saying, like, because here, if you're going the old monarchy route, you know, there were times where leaders who were kings were not old enough to take the throne, so they would have somebody come in as a figurehead to run the government. Usually, and sometimes it would be the mothers. Cleopatra was an example. There's other examples.
We're not gonna get into that.
I know, but
here's what I'll say. If anything happens, it'll be a friendly fight between the two of them.
I don't think so.
Takes the saber.
The way that Bo-Katan was looking, she was looking like, I might have to kill this
you
guy.
You don't now. Have to kill him.
Or at least try to.
To win. You don't have to kill him to take the Darksaber. So you just say, all right, we're going to have a fight.
But I have this weird feeling that, you know, there's something going to be in The Mandalorian as a code of honor or something that, you know, it's obvious Mando doesn't want it. It's obvious that he would be losing on purpose and giving up. And you could say it's not a fair fight. It's not an honorable means of victory. Therefore, I cannot take – they have to do – it has to be – there has to be something to lose, I think, for them to justify.
He doesn't otherwise, to pass the saber – and I'll say this one more time. To pass the saber, he does not have to die. When Gideon took it from Bo-Katan, he didn't kill her. When Din Djarin took it from Gideon, he didn't kill him. He does not have to die. So she could challenge him to a duel. I can't think of the name right now. To a duel. She can beat him fairly as long as he's not pulling punches and crap, and then take the Darksaber and be the ruler.
I don't know. It just doesn't feel that easy. The way that the look on her face when he walked in, and she's pissed, but and then the way that Moff was playing off on it so much, it seems like we're going to have more of a conflict or a problem than I think you're making it out. I know that he doesn't have to, but I think there's going to be something to where it's not going to be that simple, because they got to have an explanation for season three. You know?
Well, the season three is, it's going to be the Darksaber issue is going to be resolved in the first episode, and then it's going to be them fighting their way back and trying to take Mandalore.
It could be. But I don't know. It just doesn't
feel
that simple.
That's all season three is going to be. It's not going to be a whole season about Bo-Katan getting the Darksaber.
Well, no, I don't. I'm not saying it is, but I don't think it's going to be as simple as that. I think that's a little
bit.
See. You know, if this show proves anything, I don't. You know, it's never going to be as simple as we think.
The story's not over.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just. I thought that was an interesting theory. It'd be a fun theory. See how that goes.
We'll see.
All right. Well.
Well,
that's pretty much it for Mando season two, I think.
Yeah, fantastic season. They did a good job. Looking forward to the Boba Fett show and the season three of The Mandalorian, if they're not the same thing. Well, I'll just say the continuation of Din Djarin's story. Look forward to that.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill
it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it,
Huxley!
Punch it! Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
All right. Well, so what are we going to be doing for next week's episode?
So, winner, winner, chicken dinner, the show we are covering that we polled that defeated the other three shows is Star Trek Discovery.
Damn, was it really?
Yep.
Damn. All right. Well, I guess... It wasn't my pick, but...
Nope, wasn't mine either.
I mean, in my opinion, from seeing the first two seasons of Discovery and have seen Battlestar before, I would have much rather have watched Battlestar Galactica. I'm not a huge fan of Discovery. But, I mean, I'll watch it for the show. We'll do it. We'll enjoy it. And I'll criticize the hell.
Yeah, we'll enjoy it. Yeah, we'll criticize the hell out of it. There's some good episodes in season one, and I like season two. I haven't heard about season. I haven't watched season three. I've heard some good things, and I've heard some not so good things. So it could go either way.
I've heard that they explain a lot of plot holes in the temporal Cold War, which was something that they talked about a lot in Star Trek Enterprise for any Enterprise fans out there.
Well, we'll see. We'll get there because it seems like I'm thinking we'll break this up into parts. So, you know, the first three episodes of season one is what we'll cover next time as our part one. And there's roughly 36 episodes total between the first three seasons. So I'm thinking it'll be a good 12 part, you know, knock out all of Discovery.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we could do it. 12 part.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. We could do it. We got this.
And hopefully by that time, Orville could be out. And then how do we do it for the next show, though? Are we going to kind of stick with the polling? And just,
we'll see. We got 12 episodes. We got 12 weeks to figure that out. That's about 3 months.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I'll be most of the way through my last semester of college by then.
Well, either
hopefully,
way.
Knock on wood.
Next time on Deep Space High. Episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Season 1 of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, check it out. We're looking forward to it ourselves. All right. Well, I guess that will do it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next time as we start our discussion on Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, and don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook at Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews and Instagram at Deep Space High Podcast. If you follow either one of those sources, you can stay up to date with the latest news and announcements from our show.
Yeah, and we also want to ask everyone to please leave a review and give us a good rating on Apple Podcasts. This helps
five stars
spread
only.
Yes, please. This helps spread the word about our show, gets more listeners, and it helps get you guys better content. And I think that's something you guys probably would want.
Let's get some more listeners and get going.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve. May the Force be with us all. And happy holidays. This is our Christmas episode. Didn't even mention that.
Oh, yeah. Merry Christmas. And a happy new year.
Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, happy holidays to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's a nice, safe one. And we'll catch you next time on Deep Space High.